folks, this is Scott Weingart, and you're listening to the MCrit Podcast. Alrighty, folks. So, I just got back from Seoul, Korea. I was at the Pacific Emergency Medicine Conference, which was amazing. I got to hang out with Joe Lex. I got to see Seoul, which is one of my favorite cities in the world now, even though I've only gone there once. I got to meet Cliff Reed's boss, Andy Ratchford. Excellent guy. It was a great trip. You don't care. I am recording this in the midst of a hurricane, Hurricane Sandy. I am actually in an apartment in the evacuation zone. I have chosen not to leave. So if the recording suddenly cuts off, it's because my windows have exploded and I am now on the floor, comatose from severe head injury. So if I stop recording, please call 911. And so today is going to be a bit of a muddle in terms of the episode. If you hear background noise, it is the 70 mile per hour winds that are erupting in the what is ordinarily a wonderful riverside view of Manhattan. Okay, let's get to the show. This show is going to be the confirmation of two of my prejudices. And those two prejudices are that we should be thinking more about our fluid choices rather than just reaching for normal saline as a reflex action, and that there probably is no group of sick patients who deserve anything except lung protective ventilation. So let's start off with the first issue. If you remember back to my acid-base podcasts, I've always discussed that I was taught in my critical care training that you just don't grab a routine fluid for everyone. You actually look at the patient's clinical situation and pick your fluid based on the acid base effects you want. And if you have listened to those podcasts, then you know that normal saline is a very acidic fluid because it has the same amount of chloride as it does sodium, which means that the net effect of things like normal saline or even things like water that have the same amount of sodium and chloride is to cause a net acidifying effect. And then on the other hand, we have solutions that we call balanced, meaning that the sodium and chloride relationship in the fluid is closer to that of plasma, which in a normal patient is a sodium of about 140 and a chloride of about 102. So there's a 38 milliequivalent per liter difference between the sodium and the chloride. And things that come closer to that we call balanced solutions because they don't cause the same degree of acidosis. And in fact, some of them actually are basic. Now, it just made good sense to me always to recommend that if a patient is acidotic, then you would grab a balanced solution. And if the patient is alkalotic, you would grab something like normal saline, which is an acidotic solution. It just made good sense. It made your numbers look nice, but I never had any outcome data to really show this was advantageous until just recently in the JAMA, an article was published called The Association Between a Chloride Liberal versus Chloride Restrictive IV Fluid Administration Strategy and Kidney Injury in Critically Ill Adults. And the link to this obviously will be found in the show notes at mcrit.org. And so what was the result of this study? Well, it's not a fantastic study. It was prospective, but it was before and after. And in one group, they let people use whatever they wanted. And in the second group, the intervention group, they actually restricted things like normal saline or typical albumin, which essentially is normal saline with albumin suspended in it. They restricted those, and you needed approval to use those solutions, thereby forcing people to grab things like Ringer's lactate, lactated Ringer's, Hartman's, etc., or plasmolite. And if you want to hear more discussion about what those fluids are, then go back to that acid-base podcast, which is also linked in the show notes. But essentially, normal saline acidotic and lactated Ringer's, the true balanced solution, lactated Ringer's was actually designed to cause no effects on your acid base as a net when you give it in even large amounts. And then plasmolite, which is essentially a basic solution, it actually will lead you to be alkalotic. And what was the difference? The difference was that in the control group, there was worse creatinine, there was predisposition to kidney injury, and there was no overall difference in hospital mortality. But there was more kidney injury in the patients who were not given the balanced solutions. Is it definitive? No, but it is supporting my prejudice that you should choose your fluid based on the patient condition. So if the patient has been vomiting and therefore is alkalotic, you probably should give them normal saline. And if the patient is has diarrhea or has severe sepsis or has DKA, I reach for a balanced solution. And so for me, that usually means in my hospital, Isolite, which essentially is the same thing as Plasmolite. If you have a patient who you do not have any issues where you're worried about osmolality and you want something that won't change acid base at all, maybe lactated Ringers. We'll talk about that osmolality question in just a bit because it is another point of interest for me. But I was planning on presenting this JAMA article, and then because I read it regularly without any miss at all, I was reading Cliff Reed's blog, the Resus Me blog, and he found a second article that just came out, and it was from the Annals of Surgery, and this is Major Complications, Mortality, and Resource Utilization After Open Abdominal Surgery, Normal Saline Compared to Plasmolite. And in this trial, which also was not a randomized controlled trial, it was another one of those observational studies, the use of a balanced solution after surgery was associated with less postoperative morbidity than normal saline. Again, not definitive. Again, the complications were usually renal complications, but another article to add to the evidence that maybe it's bad to just routinely reach for normal saline. So now we have two recently published articles saying maybe you should think about your fluid choices just a little bit. Now, one of the problems is that Plasmolite or Isolite, like I use, is a little bit more expensive than normal saline, and it's a little bit more expensive than lactated Ringers. Both of those solutions are essentially not even worth considering the cost there. They're negligible. But these name solutions that have not been around for as long as lactated Ringers do have a bit of an expense. We're not talking a large expense here. We're talking minimal. But it's probably not worth switching over your entire ED to just always using Plasmolite, like some people have suggested. It is a bit costly in aggregate like that. All right, so that was the question of morbidity from balanced solutions versus unbalanced solutions like normal saline. I want to just put in a brief discussion of this concept of osmolality, because in some of the comments on my show on the brain code, the increased intracranial pressure, I had made the statement that I had always been taught and therefore practiced that the fluid of choice for patients with potential increased ICP is either normal saline, which has a higher than plasma sodium, 154, or Plasmolite, which has 140 exactly plasma's sodium. Those two are the right choices for patients with potential ICP increases, while something like Ringers or Hartmann's with 130 sodium, not such a great choice. And now, in those comments, Peter Sharon, a brilliant guy from Down Under, who will be on the podcast because he is so smart and has a lot of good things to say about the resuscitation of severely ill trauma patients and neurotrauma patients. So he's coming on for sure. Peter, we got to set up a date. But Peter said, well, is that true? That sounds like crap. It sounds like myth. And since Peter's a smart guy, I had to actually think about the basis for my comments, because it's one of those things that I had to decide, well, is this real or is this just something I'm being taught that I'm regurgitating? And so I started a real intensive think about osmolality. And so when you pick up a bag of lactated Ringers, on the bag it says that its osmolality is 272 or 275, depending on which solution. And that didn't make a lot of sense, because a vast majority of the osmolality, when you look at the formulas I've always been using, which is, you know, the 2 times sodium plus BUN with a correction factor plus glucose with a correction factor, well, it shouldn't get that high. So what's going on here? And I actually put it out on Twitter, and one of my favorite people now on Twitter is Brian Hayes, the Farm ER Tox guy, and he sent back the formula for how you calculate the osmolality of a bag of fluids, and it seemed, based on his formula, that each aspect in the bag, sodium, chloride, lactate, what have you, each has an osmolality correction and each should be factored in. And that made me realize something that you might all know, but I suspect maybe not, because for me it was somewhat of a realization, which is this formula we use for osmolality, this 2 times sodium plus the BUN plus the glucose, both of those latter with a correction factor, is crap. It's a shortcut. It's not the real formula for the osmolality of plasma or solution. It's garbage. It's a short, quick, dirty way of doing it, but it's not the real way of doing it. The real way is you take each component and correct it and then add it in to get the final osmolality. And that was kind of mind-blowing for me because I realized, well, is my entire thought of this wrong? And then when I thought about it even more, I realized, no, still again, there's another level of this because the calculation of a bag of fluids is what's sitting in the bag, but what your body does with it is very different. So as soon as you put in that lactated ringers, that lactate should get taken up by the liver, by your muscles, by what have you, and gets chewed up and converted back to bicarb. And the osmolality in vivo is actually very different. And we go back then to our quick and dirty method. The real final osmolality in a sick patient really comes down to the sodium. The glucose is going to get taken up. The lactate is going to get metabolized. The sodium is what matters in these solutions. And I will continue to say that if you give lactated ringers, you're going to have a small net decrease in your serum sodium and your serum osmolality. Now, which of those two matter more? Probably your serum sodium. There's an article I'll put in the show notes saying that even in the face of high osmolality, things like hypertonic still will cause a decreased ICP because it's probably the sodium. So I'm going to maintain again that lactated ringers is not a great solution for brain injury with potential increased ICP or known increased ICP, though there's not great evidence for it. But it, I just wanted to put out there, I find it very interesting that my entire thought pattern on osmolality is now very different than it was. And yet it all came back to where it was, which is looking at the sodium of solution is probably the important part. But if you gave lactated ringers for a patient with high ICP, it's probably not causing a big deal. Though I did find one article, which I'll put in the show notes as well. And as always, all these articles wind up in the show notes, that showed if you gave healthy volunteers a bunch of lactated ringers, their osmolality decreases. And that's in patients with good kidneys. So in patients who are sick, you're probably causing an even larger net decrease in osm, probably because its sodium is lower than plasma. And so shout outs to Peter Sharon, shout outs to Brian Hayes. Brian, I need you on the podcast as well. You're too smart not to have on here. Pick a topic. You have an open invitation. That brings up still another perhaps 20-second diversion we should just go down, which is most of these balanced solutions, the plasmolytes, the lactated ringers, require conversion of their bicarb surrogate, their buffer base, in some organ of the body if they're really going to be balanced solutions. For instance, your lactated ringers, if you're not able to process that lactate and turn it into bicarb because you're in the midst of a lactic acidosis, you have cirrhosis, your liver doesn't work, and your heart and brain are not using enough, and the lactate sits around, that is exactly the same as normal saline. It's the same anions hanging around as if they were chloride, and guess what? It's no longer a balanced solution. Plasmolyte, which has sodium acetate as its buffer in addition to something else, which I'm not remembering offhand. If these are not being converted, then these are the same as the unbalanced solution. So in order for these balanced solutions to really work, they need to be converted from their buffer base to bicarb, or else they're an unbalanced solution. Now you might say, if you're smart, well, then really what we should be doing is just having solutions that are balanced with bicarb in the first place. And you would be right, except you cannot manufacture those solutions. They do not stay shelf stable. What happens is CO2 leaches into the bags and actually converts the sodium bicarb that you have in there into other substances that do not continue to act as buffer bases. And so that is why we have to use things like sodium lactate, things like acetate, etc. And that is why we have problems in patients who are really sick and can't metabolize these buffer bases. You can make bicarb-containing solutions, but you have to mix them on the fly. You have to take a glass bottle, which is CO2 impermeable, and actually mix it into your solution on the fly. And then you'd have the ideal solution, but that's very expensive and very onerous in terms of task management, which is why we don't do it. And there's this big school of renal folks who feel that bicarb buffer dialysate is the best thing out there, and they actually mix in the bicarb in real time. Just a little diversion to tell you that it's not all, you know, happiness and gravy with these balanced solutions in really sick patients, because if they're not able to convert the buffer bases to bicarb, then they're still crap. Okay. So that was the piece about chloride poisoning. That was not my term. Cliff Reed coined that. I think it's brilliant. Chloride poisoning for these unbalanced solutions. Let's talk about pressure poisoning, another non-toxicological poisoning. And the pressure poisoning is using standard, or I should say at this stage, old-fashioned ideas of tidal volume for patients that don't yet have ARDS. If you remember in my dominating the ventilator talks, I have always advocated a 8 cc per kg maximum tidal volume, even in patients who are being intubated or already intubated for reasons other than ARDS or acute lung injury. I would tell you that based on my reading of the evidence, you never should put any patient on 10 cc's per kg ideal body weight, 12 cc's per kg ideal body weight. Every patient in the ED should start at 8, which is the beginning of the ARDS-NET strategy, and check plateaus and drop accordingly if the plateaus are greater than 30. And that's for all patients, not for patients with ARDS. Well, this is another prejudice that I didn't have great evidence for. There was reasonable evidence from a couple studies, but not great evidence. Now, a meta-analysis was just published, again in the JAMA, the association between the use of lung protective ventilation with lower tidal volumes and clinical outcomes among patients without ARDS. And this meta-analysis, and I know meta-analyses are generally crap, unless they are supporting my viewpoint, in which case they are quite good and very useful. But this meta-analysis showed increased morbidity and increased mortality if you did not use the lower tidal volume strategies in patients without ARDS. I think this is worth a read. I think this is good stuff. I think at this stage, if you are not using 8 cc's per kg as your starting regimen, you probably should change over. That should be your starting tidal volume for all patients you're intubating in the ED, probably in the OR as well, but I'm not an anesthesiologist. I just married one. So in the ED and ICU, 8 cc's per kg should be your max tidal volume, and check plateaus and work down from there. That meta-analysis, linked in the show notes. Also linked is Cliff's excellent blog post on this same subject. So there you go. That is the hurricane episode of the MCRIT podcast. I know this is a bit of a muddle. I'm going to put out a bunch of wheeze in the next couple of weeks, and the podcast 2 weeks from now will be on one topic, not multiple things muddled together. But let me know if you like this, because I haven't generally done these reviews of the recent literature, but this one was specifically requested by a few people on Twitter, so I figured I'd put it out there. I figured it's a good thing because the weather is a bit of a storm as well. Why not put out a storm of a podcast? So let me know in the comments what you think. Is this good? Is this bad? As always, if you are not getting CME for listening to these episodes, well, that is just crazy. You should be. Why listen? Why spend the time and not get CME? But forget about it. Even if you didn't need CME, please support the show. We need your support to keep the show going, to keep it in its current form, to keep it free for all of the house staff, the residents, the registrars out there. This is Scott Weingart for the MCRIT podcast saying I've survived the hurricane, at least for these 20 minutes, and I hope to talk to you soon. Bye-bye.